49, 1099. Previous hypnagogic revelation. I bought my redemption through suffering. This would be a mythic identification with Christ, the way of the cross. Only Christ, through his suffering, can buy our redemption. The dream I just now had of the tortured and dying sheep led to a wall where its brutalized body leaves a 2D painting, like of the Cro-Magnon men of animals, of supernatural beauty. I am told how every detail of the gestalt of the painting came to be, derived from the suffering sheep. And I say in anguish and awareness of the sheep's anguish, I hope they, the torturers of the sheep, burn in hell for doing this. Obviously, the sheep is Christ. The painting is a Roman fresco, mosaic. But this is done not once, but repeatedly. There are innumerable sheep paintings, as if branded by a branding iron. This fits in with an earlier hypnagogic revelation, a scene in which the shroud of Christ is burned onto a wall by intense heat as a painting, i.e. for all eternity. And the more they torture the sheep, the better a picture they got. It was dreadful, but the picture was indescribably beautiful. Here is an antithesis created. The suffering of the sheep is absolutely awful and to be abhorred, and the painting produced is absolutely beautiful. But this is not presented as a choice, but as a fact. This is how you get such a painting. Still, I deplore it in the dream. So I feel it is not justified. This torture is not justified even by the picture produced. So my emotional sympathy, agape, outweighs my aesthetic response, however profound the latter. This recalls the passage in Paul, where he says it is more important to possess agape than the charisma of the Holy Spirit. Is this, then, the dream, the clue to the true meaning of Christianity and Christ's death, that through agape we instinctively respond that it is not justified? There is no end justification for such dreadful means. The death of Christ, then, is like the purpose of a Greek tragedy. It is to inspire pity and terror, and out of this a profound sense of no. It should not be. Art subordinated to pity. Why, this is the theme of my Chains of Air story. The meaning lies in the sorrow aroused rather than in the results of the art produced. Beauty in the Platonic eternal eidos. The message is anti-Platonic klagendis geschrei. Note. German, cries of lamentation. End note. Not aesthetic appreciation. The ephemeral animal's fate arouses certain complex feelings of far more redemptive importance than the cool perception of beauty. The epiphenomenal sheep's suffering has more significance than the eternal, hence archetypal art produced. We are to react to the specific sheep and not the eidos, pity, terror, and moral no-saying, praised the feathers and forgot the dying bird, Tom Paine's analysis of aristocratic society, his call to political revolution. Then Christ has come to extricate the means from being sacrificed to the end, which is to say he is pitted against the very machinery of reality, e.g. DNA, the subordination of the individual creature to the timeless type. Note. Dick's opposition to the concept of determinism is here carried to its most extreme, opposition to the very idea of natural law. Dick places the moral value of the individual, the means, above the selfish genes that drive the organism to reproduce, the end. The being itself is greater than its programmed purpose. Dick refuses to accept a mechanistic or deterministic explanation of life. To do so, in his view, is to ignore the actual experience of living. If a mechanistic principle underlies human life, he suggests, then it is a fetter to be burst. GM. End note. He has shown us, by his death, the awe and pity-inspiring tragedy of ordinary life. Schopenhauer. the inexorable karmic wheels, in fact. It is to rouse us to the most intense anguish, vicarious suffering, and rejection of this suffering possible, man's highest state, to vicariously, i.e. through agape, share in the suffering while at the same time to condemn it as evil, despite the good results, art, the eidos. Thinking this dream over, I would tend now to go back to my original appraisal, that it simply stated a fact, that the beautiful and imperishable comes into existence due to the suffering of individual perishable creatures who themselves are not beautiful and must be reshaped to form a template from which the beautiful is printed, forged, extracted, converted. This is the terrible law of the universe. This is the basic law. It is a fact. Also, it is a fact that the suffering of the individual animal is so great that it arouses an ultimate and absolute abhorrence and pity in us when we are confronted by it. This is the essence of tragedy, the collision of two absolutes. Absolute suffering leads to, is the means to, absolute beauty. Neither absolute should be subordinate to the other. But this is not how it is. The suffering is subordinated to the value of the art produced. Thus, the essence of horror underlies our realization of the bedrock nature of the universe. 49.1105. I had the strangest hypnopompic thought that there was no historical Jesus, that it, the Christ story, is an anti-Greek tragic drama whose point is to valorize the transient, fleeting, epiphenomenal individual in contrast to the eternal type, which, when understood properly, abolishes time, turning it into space. How? Why? Because we are DNA robots, flickering means, witness the two-tape sync programming. We don't really exist until or unless the Christ event occurs, which obliterates the twin tapes, frees us, and by abolishing time, makes us ends, not means, and hence no longer subject to Ananke, the wheels. Phylogenic self thereupon becomes available to the epiperson. It is like in part two of Faust, when Faust halts a fleeting moment. Flux, process is real. The dialectic flip-flops at enormous velocity, destroying each image as soon as it pops up. In this process, only type is real, and the individual creature just a flash. The mythic tragic drama is a spiritual ritual that breaks the prison of flux, which erases the individual for the sake of the constant, the type. What Christ as type does is, Christ is individual as type, and turns the process inside out, which is why I said I was no longer blind, and had been seeing the universe backward, and how I was on its outside skin, like walking on a balloon. I had it inside me, an inner-outer transform. Note: this passage displays an odd, eerie resemblance to Plato's description in the Phaedrus of how the immortals travel up and outside in order to stand on the backside of the heavens, which is imagined as a revolving sphere from which they can contemplate what lies beyond, that is, what exists outside the sphere. Here, perhaps, we find Dick walking on the balloon of the cosmos. Dick, of course, saw all sorts of profound connections and similarities between his own experience of Valis and ancient writers like Plato and Plotinus. Here is another. JJK. Endnote. What must be realized is that not only is the individual normally mere means, it is also not real. Plato in realism. Christ is type of the epiperson and reverses the means and individual type basis and abolishes time, hence process. Time becomes space. The individual becomes eternal, hence immortal. 49.1118. Starting with the phosphenes, there has been a disclosure of beauty to me, more and finer and higher, until it seemed the ultimate quality and value. And then the sheep dream. and the first revelation about suffering, so that I can see that absolutes are involved, the two ultimate absolutes of reality. Revelation 1. The whole cosmos is aiming at, evolving toward, beauty. Revelation 2. But at what cost? Infinite suffering by the means to the end. The creatures. Revelation 3. It isn't worth it, and Christ effects extrication from this subordination to the goal of the cosmos. This is Christianity. It is not just that the Christ story is a tragedy. Reality, for each individual creature, is a tragedy. Because the two absolutes of 1, beauty for the type, and 2, the problem of the means by which it is achieved, individual suffering, meet head-on, and the former triumphs at the expense of the latter. The species subordinates individual suffering to produce its, the species, perfection. 49, 1119. We ontogons are not only systems for processing information, but 1, information creates us, and 2, the main processing is a diversification and proliferation. You get more info out of the ontogon than you put in. 49, 1132. I've been shown a really perplexing paradox. The highest good is the harmonious fitting together of the beautiful, i.e., Pythagoras' cosmos. And this is what Theos moves everything and process toward. Okay. And then I've been shown the cost at which this is achieved, the torture and killing of the epicreatures. And I am shown that this cost is too great. So the summum bonum can only be achieved at a cost that, spiritually speaking, makes it not worth it, i.e., unacceptable. Note: Summum bonum, Latin, highest good. End note. Then, is the summum bonum actually the summum bonum? How can it be? Isn't there a logical contradiction here? Right. There sure is. This is the dramatic tragedy of the universe, of God, of all, process, reality, and goal. Teleology. Okay. Then the real summum bonum lies in saving the epicreatures, i.e., the parts which go together to make the whole. The whole is not greater than the sum of its parts. No, each and every part, ontogon, is more important than the whole. So within the summum bonum, there is a secret, a mysterious conversion occurs. The part is the real whole. The phylogon is the ontogon and vice versa. Perhaps this is an unreconcilable Irish bull, which sets off the infinite flip-flops of the dialectic. Maybe this particular paradox is the primal imbalance that is the dynamism driving reality on forever. It cannot ever be resolved. So process never ends, which is good. Maybe the ultimate paradox underlying process reality, per se, has been revealed to me. It can be defined logically this way. Question: what is the goal, purpose of all reality? Answer: the harmonious fitting together of everything, every part, into the unitary beautiful. How is this done? Tormenting and killing the many ephemeral parts. Is this justified? No. Then is the summum bonum justified? No. There is a higher value than the summum bonum. It is the extricating of the suffering parts. Then the initial answer is false. No, it is true. It is a postulate. Out of this, the dialectic, which never ends, is initiated. This here is the dramatic, tragic story which our world can be reduced to. It is our world's tale. Solution, the mind, nous, theos, must create a counter-entity which will work for the extrication of the parts at the expense of the whole. Note: the idea of God as a constantly evolving dialectic is perhaps Dick's most intriguing theological proposition, and here he gives a possible origin for this self-conflicted deity. The question of means versus ends. The top-level good, an orderly and harmonious cosmos, requires a base-level evil, the suffering of individual beings. The paradox of the greatest good requiring the greatest evil, and the corresponding split in the Godhead, constitutes a major advance from a more simplistic dualism. Put into the matrix of Christianity, this God in crisis becomes the Father, the original creator of reality and author of the law, and the Son, the Redeemer, whose mercy fulfills and abrogates that law. The notion of a dialectically evolving God also resonates strongly with the ideas of other 20th century theologians, most notably Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, whom Dick mentions frequently, and process theologians like Alfred North Whitehead and Charles Hartshorne, who appear later in the exegesis. GM. End note. Thus, the Godhead is ipso facto divided and pitted against itself. It assumes an antithetical interaction with itself. Part, half of the Godhead, works synthetically to fit everything together harmoniously into an integrated whole cosmos, and half works to assist and rescue the epiparts subjected to stress, torment, and death in the pursuit of the above goal. Hence, the Godhead is in infinite crisis. A push-pull binary dialectic is created, and this is exactly what was revealed to me as the basis, not just of reality, but of the Godhead itself. The practical result is that everything is perpetually, dynamically converted into its opposite. And this paradox in the macrocosm has mirrored effects in every microform down throughout creation. Taoism. In terms of the evolution of awareness, the total system advances through stages until it becomes aware of the cost, hence the paradox, then splits into antithetical halves and remains in this dynamic balance state forever, or else repeats the cycle again and again forever. In promoting Pythagoras's cosmos as goal, then cosmos can only be a theoretic goal. In actuality, it can never be achieved because it involves a self-contradiction, the cost. Empathy arises, and having arisen grows, defeating cosmos. Prognosis: continual growth of empathy in the system as it evolves, and away from its proper original goal. The totality voluntarily decomposes its own psychosoma. Thus, the rupture in the Godhead was necessary given its, the Godhead's, drive to complete itself as cosmos. It was driven inexorably to this schism. Hence, the one became two, and the dialectic came into existence. As it became increasingly aware, it had to repudiate its basic drive. But instead of going into a cybernetics stall, it formed an antithetical dialectic, hence dualism. Look, I didn't figure this out. It was revealed to me. At a certain stage in its evolution, the Godhead knew, had to know, utter anguish, its own creation against itself. It set up a system and now must subvert it. But it does this consciously. So it is riven, but not psychotic. It must render a verdict of damnation on itself for what it has done, i.e., try to realize the summum bonum. 49, 1151. My theological reinterpretation of Heidegger's Sein versus Das Nicht states that in ensuring creating Sein, the Godhead is unable to avoid a paradox of values which splits it and sets up an antithetical interaction within the Godhead itself, having to do with means-ends. This is based on Plato's forms versus epiphenomena. Thus, a process universe is brought into existence that is rooted in sorrow at every level. Involved in its own agonized creation, actualization, the Godhead is damaged. Split, equals damage. Thus, the fall is due to a built-in self-contradiction, and not to sin or whatever. The Godhead itself is no longer intact. It is not above or outside or transcendent to the schism. Actualization, sign, is impossible without self-damage to the Godhead, and within creation, sign. Thus, no perfect sign can exist. The Godhead has set itself a seemingly impossible goal due to the means, subordination of the ontogons to the phylogons. And our daily empirical experience with reality bears this out. It is confirmed a posteriori. A priori and a posteriori agree. Most awful of all, the Godhead stands as self-damned by its own verdict of guilt for the suffering it has imposed on the ontogons. But the alternative is das Nicht, which is worse. All the Godhead can hope for is local and furtive repair to itself due to an ontogon achieving an ontogon-phylogon identity transform, achieved through moksha by the ontogon, identification with the phylogon, of which it is ontogonous. The Godhead would be motivated to bring this about wherever possible as the ultimate goal of creation, sign superseding all other goals, e.g. realization of cosmos. The ontogon-phylogon transform would restore the Godhead to its pre-fallen state of unimpairment before creation. I seem to be saying that in creating sign, the universe, the Godhead was logically forced into sin and can only be redeemed by its own ontogons, e.g. individual creatures sentient enough to become their own phylogons. Thus I see the scheme of salvation turned upside down. The ultimate lesson or revelation or gift by the Godhead to the ontogon would be to share its, the Godhead's, own vision of the cosmos with the ontogon. But this would inexorably lead back to a counter-revelation of the paradox, means-end, and the moral ambiguity forced on the Godhead in its goal of establishing cosmos. The ontogon thus favored would then sit in judgment of the Godhead. The roles of God and creature would be reversed. Instead of God judging man, man would judge God. The final step is for man to redeem God by returning him to his original unfallen state, as the Kabbalah says, and lead him back to his throne. This is a titanic mystical theological revelation and act.